Hey, did you guys read that thing in the New Yorker last month about how golf is an analogy for marriage?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did read that. Did you hear the thing at McSweeney's? Mm. I was comparing CD tracks and album tracks. Did you read that?
Yeah. Did you read that thing in Mother Jones about eco chairs and eco ways to sit?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Did you read that thing in Spain about all the festivals?
Did you read that thing in Pace? It was about the National.
Oh, I saw that. Did you see that thing in Dwell about all the mid-century houses?
Yeah. Did you read the New York Times?
Yes.
New York Observer?
Yes.
Washington Post?
Yes.
Wall Street Journal?
Of course I read it.
Did you read that steampunk article in Boing Boing?
I did not like the end of it.
Did you read that skywriting over the Willamette River?
Yes. Did you read that fortune cookie?
Yes.
From last night?
Yes.
Did you read it?
Yes.
There were two.
Yes. Did you read that thing that guy wrote in the sand on the beach?
Yeah.
Did you read the Portland Mercury?
Yeah.
Did you read the Willamette Week?
Yeah.
Did you read the Seattle Stranger?
Beginning to end.
Did you read the SF Weekly?
I loved it.
The Harvard Lampoon?
Well written.
Did you read Mad Magazine?
I did not like the end of it.
TBTL! I'm so excited! I'm so scared!
I am brave. Roller coasters, love them. Scary movies, I've seen Ghostbusters like 7 times. I regularly drive through neighborhoods that have only recently been gentrified. So yeah, I'm pretty much not afraid of anything.
I like not having fun. I like your idea of fun, I mean, our idea of fun. I like not having that.
What podcast are you talking about?
TBTL. TBTL.
Where are the animals? God, they grow up so fast, you know? One day they're helping out with the podcast, the next day they're just off on their own, just living their lives. Oh, I didn't want to get this emotional this early in the program, but I guess it is what it is. Also known as a Wednesday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Peace and love, peace and love.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Mr. Unlimited.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City.
Ooh.
Got quite a show for you on this Wednesday. It is my Wednesday, by the way. Unlike my Tuesday, which feels more like my Monday. It's episode 2651 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Yesterday was the day that Starbucks shut down for half the day to have its roughly 175,000 employees sit down and do some training on trying to really consider what their biases, to try to figure out if they're sort of biased or not, because of an incident that happened in Philadelphia a while ago where two African-American men were basically arrested for being in a Starbucks. I was reading about it yesterday, and there was scant details because most of the Starbucks employees were keeping a tight lip on how the training went. And then I realized, oh my gosh, we here at TBTL, we've got somebody on the inside.
Hey, Hermano.
That's right. My actual Hermano, DFTB, David from the basement, works at Starbucks and went to the thing. And this morning, I called him up. He's back at his shift. He's back at it again in the mall Starbucks here in Bellingham. And he went on a break, and I called him up and talked to him. So we'll play that tape coming up. A report from the inside of the Starbucks anti-bias training. So that will be happening. Plus, yesterday, if you listen to the show, you heard us auditioning for actual public radio weekend stardom.
You want to do a make-believe radio show in a room somewhere. I'm telling you, there's no money in that.
We've sent off the audition tape to WBUR in Boston. And I would like to tell all of you why I am both proud of what we sent them and why I know in no universe will we make it to the next level of this audition process. And that's not a bad thing. I'm proud, but also realistic. So we'll get into that, plus emails and V-mails. We will talk about all of those things with this guy. He's like the coolest person I've ever met.
Man, that's right.
He's a Cuyahoga clam. He's a co-bro of this program. In fact, the longest running co-bro of the show.
I can only hear Yanni now.
He is Andrew Hodor Walsh, and he joins us from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hello and good morning, my dude.
Good morning, Luke. I have so many things I want to talk to you about right now. Can I
good,
just go in
order?
Good,
I got nothing.
Really?
So I need you to hoist me on your back like a papoose and carry me through the next hour or so of imaginary radio.
I saw on the internet, this is not one of the things that I wanted to start with, but I saw on the internet a special shirt.
I have so much to talk about. Let's start with something that's not on that list.
Hold on a second. This is TBTL, right? Okay, yeah. No, I'm on the right show. Oh, I'm doing it right. I'm doing it right.
No, definitely.
I saw somebody tweeting a photo of a t-shirt that you can get for a new dad, like a TBTL daddy, that you could put your baby in this big pocket like a kangaroo. People are loving.
Haven't you heard from enough people, including Steve Riverboy Newman, that you're never to say TBTL daddy again? Was this all just, did you just want to shoehorn that in just to vex us?
People are loving, absolutely loving the TBTL daddy talk. I put a poll on Facebook.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
Asking people if we should up our usage of TBTL daddy by 50%, by 100%, or unlimited. And unlimited is ahead by
Mr. Unlimited
70-some votes. I also
Did you see that Hayes wants to come on the show to talk about
podcasting?
Specifically about podcasting, which he's, of course, now one of the national leaders in that particular discipline, but also about why he thinks Mr. Unlimited is like a uniquely annoying thing to hear.
Oh, that's right.
Unlimited. Like amongst annoying things that we play on the show, it's sort of in a league of its own. I'm sorry, though. I'm distracting us from one of the things that you're talking about, even though it's not one of the things you're planning on talking about.
Right.
Back to you.
Oh, I'm looking at Chris's note here. He says, I think you could write a whole dissertation about why Mr. Unlimited Drop is the most annoying sound in the world. So I read that as in somebody could research it and then come up with some answers. You read that as in Chris has his own theory about it. The truth may be somewhere between the two.
I just feel like since he's launched his own podcast, Why Is This Happening? And by the way, I can't believe I didn't get more love from either of you when I talked about nearly sharding during a softball game, my new podcast I'm launching called Why Is This Crappening? I got no positive feedback from either of you.
No,
Chris, a pretty good spoof.
Chris did that Apple iPhone thing where it said he like loved it or laughed at it something.
That's the lowest form of feedback now, which, by the way, I avail myself of constantly.
He gave you a double. Like, I don't know how it works, so I don't have an iPhone, so I don't know what your buttons look like when you like, laugh, love, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That's my book. I just finished stenciling that in our kitchen.
Like, laugh, love, whatever. But he both laughed at it and liked it. I've never seen somebody double emote on a text before. I didn't respond because you want to know the truth? Because I think you said
the
same day that Stu said the stappening joke on our show. And I felt like, you know, I mean, I know we don't usually get into joke stealing on this show, but it was a little close.
All,
it was just a little close.
You are tap dancing up to a field full of landmines called getting me back on that topic, which I'm being very self-disciplined.
This is going to be a good
what
show.
What I have realized about that topic is that I am probably on planet Earth, maybe the only person who feels the way I feel about it. It's a very strange thing. Okay, now we're in basically sub-conversation 7 from where we started, which was a sub-conversation today. So I apologize. But let me say quickly about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not weighing in on my rightness, wrongness, my tone, etc. It's been an interesting experience for me because it's like if somebody is suffering with a delusion, right? You would hope that they would be able to find it somewhere within themselves when everyone else on Earth is telling them, no, the sky is blue. And they're looking at it, they're going, no, the sky looks red to me. They're like, I know you think it's red. Everyone's telling you it's blue. Mm-hmm. At some point, you have to just assume everyone else is seeing something you're not seeing, even though you hold that truth to be self-evident that the sky is red. In this case, I feel very strongly about my point of view and about my whole thing with it. But every single person I'm hearing from is saying something different, and they're consistent in what they're saying. So I have no choice but to accept their version of reality, and it's, no joke, been a little hard for me.
Like Genevieve. Genevieve was just talking to our friends last night about this. I'm trying to think if she might have even shared this view when she was on our 24-hour marathon podcast, but she has this weird fear that one day she's just going to wake up and be a flat earther. Like, this is a fear of hers because she will get into, like, these sub societies. That's not the right word. These little corners of the internet, and she'll kind of scratch these itches, like the men's rights stuff. She just, like, she goes into these subreddits and is just, like, fascinated.
What was the men's rights one that has a funny name that telling? It's not incels, but I know that she knows about that one, too. But it was
pre-incel.
It was something about, well, anyway,
men going their own way.
Going their own way, exactly.
Mingtaos.
Oh, Mingtaos. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so she has this weird.
She's afraid she's going to wake up and be a flat earther.
Yes, and essentially, she's going to just, because there are people out there that think that, she does not think that at all. She doesn't believe there's any evidence of it. But it's so disturbing to her that there are people who can, like, earnestly, and like a bunch of people who can earnestly say and believe that this whole round earth thing is part of a conspiracy, and everybody who doesn't see that are just sheeple, and we're just drinking the Kool-Aid. And like, she's really worried that one day something like that is going to happen to her, and she's going to lose all grip on what reality is. And I think I think this is something that is maybe somewhat unique to the Trump era as well. I have a feeling that there are some maybe broader fears that are kind of maybe fueling this. But anyway, so is that how you were feeling with the meme talk?
Well, I mean, how I'm feeling is just I have my opinion of the matter, and I have what I believe to be the objective reality of the world, and then I have the feedback from you, from many listeners. And it's been consistent, which is that I overreacted and it was difficult to listen to.
Oh, the listeners weighed in?
Yeah, people mentioned it, like, you know, in emails to me. Not even directly. Like, people didn't email me to say you overreacted and that was hard to listen to. People are, like, emailing about other things. Like, when's the song of the summer coming back? But then they'll mention in passing that it was hard to listen to. The feedback that I've heard about that particular show, or really set of shows, I consider them a triptych, is that I sounded shrill and I sounded petty, et cetera, et cetera. I honestly don't feel that I was that way, but the fact that every piece of feedback I've received is consistent. And people who aren't trying to be mean to me, they're trying to just, again, they're literally mentioning it in passing. I have no choice but to accept that everyone else's view of this is the correct view and that my view is incorrect. But that's a weird experience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like there are times when I've gotten mad at you on the show and said something rude, and I kind of immediately realize that I'm in the wrong. And later on, upon reflection, I feel bad about what I said. Like, it's easy for me to go, oh yeah, you know what? I was triggered. I was emotionally flooded, and I said something that I regret. I have that feeling pretty frequently in my life. But this is a different. This is a horse of a different color. I very much stand by everything that I said and feel like it was totally legit. But everyone's telling me, yeah, you went too far with that. And so again, I have to just sort of go like, well, it's not everyone else who's crazy, and I'm the only one who gets it. I'm the one not getting it. But I'm just doing that based purely on assessing everyone else's reaction, not based on anything that I'm feeling differently in my heart. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're talking about.
It's a weird place to be. Okay, so on that note, is there any way can we get the toothpaste back into this tube?
Yeah.
Can we rewind back to the stuff that you wanted to talk about that wasn't on your list of things you wanted to talk about?
Okay.
Where were we?
What do we talk about when we talk
when
about
we talk about
my list?
Not talking about stuff. Actually, how about this? Let's take a break because we're at that point. I'm not just trying to mess with you.
No, I know.
Let's take
is.
A break because A, we can then compose ourselves. And B, we won't push the break off into the far, far distance as we often do.
But I got
so
my list.
Let's
right
do this
here.
Quick break. We're gonna come back. We're gonna like, laugh, love, whatever. And we're gonna get into Andrew's list of things to talk about. We will also play the tape of David from the basement on what the Starbucks day of consideration actually looked like from the inside, and a bunch of other stuff too. Don't go anywhere. It's TBTL. It's like Bikini Kill or something.
This is Throwing Muses. It's a it's either a very early album or a compilation that came out of their very early songs. I like that song.
Did you pick that for any thematic reason?
We were talking about your meme, so I was thinking about dogs and cats. So I typed dog into iTunes. I wasn't finding anything. I didn't have a lot of time to dink around.
You didn't find any Temple of the Dog?
Oh, I didn't, actually, in my iTunes. And so I found this because it's on an album called In a Doghouse, which actually, in hindsight, maybe you were like in the doghouse with the listeners. I don't know. But I do not want to get distracted. I want to. I have three things.
I'll say, what's up, though?
Yeah, laser focus. Yes. Laser focus right now.
And they almost all refer back to the intro of the show. So I'm glad that we're doing this after the break. Number one, when you have me like some sort of a Pavlovian, I guess, dog.
Right.
When you said morning in the intro, I literally flinched because I thought you were going to play that rooster sound. And now apparently when Luke Burbank says morning, I flinch. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem healthy to me.
But see, the key is, and what's especially sadistic is sometimes I don't play it. And
yes,
you might think that that was purely just an accident, an oversight. It wasn't. I had the rooster because yesterday and today we started recording the show before noon West Coast, which technically makes it a morning program. And I had the rooster crow still ready to go from yesterday's show. And I took it out because I was like, I can't let Andrew get comfortable, even in his discomfort, knowing when this is going to happen.
God damn, that's diabolical.
This is a thought that I had today, Andrew. It's really messed up.
Number two, and I'm trying to figure out if we should do this as some sort of a quiz. The intro that I played today, it was probably, I think it was from the very first skit I ever saw of Portlandia. The did you read this? Did you read that? Did you read this?
Yeah.
And I love that. I went back and I chose that as
I live in that today. Skit, by the way, unfortunately.
I don't
like that about myself. Except it's literally two possible references, and they are the New York Times or the New Yorker. Mm. I start 40% of the conversations with Carrie up going basically.
That's my wife.
Did you catch that New York Times piece? And it's a kind of an annoying quality, but it's where I'm getting most of my information. And so when something sparks my interest, I mean, maybe I just don't need to always qualify where it was from.
Also, you know, it really shows what an East Coast elitist you are. I mean, try opening Red State? Would it kill you for once in your life?
Possibly. I'm not willing to risk it.
Good answer. Here's what I was thinking, though, on listening to that while we were just playing it right now live for the show. I decided to make a list of every publication that they mention in there because I was like, oh, God, I wonder how many of these have folded or are just like shells of their former selves. And I was surprised to find, I think, unless some of these have just been really decimated and they still have a web presence, every single one of those publications still exists with the exception of National Lampoon Magazine. May I go through these with you
briefly? Wow, that's pretty fast figuring on your part. So you were actually able to write those down in real time. What is the list?
Okay, so we have Golf Magazine, McSweeney's. Ooh, that's going to get real annoying. I'll mix it up a little bit.
No, yeah. I like it.
Yeah, okay. Mother Jones, Spin Magazine, Paste, Dwell, The New York Times. I was just getting sick of the bell. The New York Observer. Oddly, no New Yorker, Luke.
Wait, does the New York Observer still exist? Doesn't
I thought I looked it up.
Didn't Jared Kushner run that into the ground?
Wait, did I not look that one up?
I mean, look, I don't know that it's folded. I just know, I think Kushner bought it some years ago.
No,
I don't know if he made
you're
it
right. You know what? There is something, Observer.com, but that is not the New York Observer.
Bom,
the New York
bom,
Observer
bom, bom,
was
bom, bom, bom.
A print publication.
Dude, on my media.
Man. Wait, no, meant to do this. That's for me. I'm good at the buzzers and the bells.
I'm not trying to get cocky. I'm just saying I'm proud of myself that I somehow picked that out.
No,
I'm not trying to get big headed.
Sometimes people say that my head is too big for my body, and then I say, compared to what?
I just played that for your enjoyment.
God, I love Jenny Slate. Good call, though, New York Observer. I think I just assumed that was still up and about. It's not. Wall Street Journal.
You know,
okay.
The thing about the Observer that was also notable to me was when they printed it on paper, it was like rose-colored or like pinkish, the actual newsprint. Did you ever hold a copy of the New York Observer?
I don't think so, no.
I mean, it was probably a way to try to make it stand out, but it was like the newsprint was just the slightest tint of pink or something, which I kind of thought was interesting.
That website, Observer.com, I assumed somebody unrelated to the original New York Observer just swooped in and decided to take it because it's a good, it's a good name if you're going to start a crappy
sure.
website.
Poop, doody, whoop, scoop, poop.
It actually ceased publication in 2016. It's print publication, but it does continue as a website-based news and media site. So it would appear that there is actually some connective DNA there. Wall Street Journal, boing, boing. Portland Mercury. It's the Portland Mercury. Is that correct? The Portland Mercury?
Yeah, that's the stranger of Portland. Yeah. It is, I believe, literally founded by some stranger staffers.
The Willamette Weekly. Which is also similar. The Stranger, they mentioned, San Francisco
My daughter
Weekly.
Is, I think, applying for an internship at the Willamette Weekly.
Oh, really? That's really cool.
Yeah, she...
Tell her not to
call
it the Willamette.
We were talking about it the other day.
When I was supposed to be a journalist, and I was pre-interviewing a farmer who was in the Willamette Valley, and I was new here, and I kept asking him what it's like to be in Willamette. And then the National Lampoon magazine was the last one. Doesn't exist anymore. So I still think I can use that tape until there's more than half of them out of publication, right?
Oh, yeah. The expiration date on that tape is it's months to years in the future. Speaking of, I know you got more things to talk about. Can I? Oh, God.
No, you know what? The third thing I was going to do was I'm having some effed up computer issues, but they're just like these small weird things that are driving me crazy, and I was gonna tell you about it, but actually that's tedious and boring. I'm gonna see if I can fix them, and I will report back tomorrow.
Is it your American Public Media issued Lenovo ThinkPad that's
no,
getting in trouble?
It has nothing to do with work. I'm just thinking like I'm trying not to get
gamer
into
ready giant turbo laptop.
It is my giant turbo laptop. I'm getting this weird error message from iTunes constantly now, and I've been poking around.
The podcast you're trying to post does not meet the minimum standard for entertaining.
And it gave me a very specific number, like letter number combination of the error code, and I've been like searching on that, and it seems like this is an issue that is just popping up with a few other people too, but it doesn't seem to be big enough that... Usually if you're having a specific computer issue and you have a code like that, you can quickly figure out how to fix it online because people have had this problem before and it's very easy to find those. But it seems like it's only popping up in weird places, and I'm now in Twitter conversations with people. Like I did a search for this code on Twitter and people are writing to Apple saying, can you help me with this? So what I'm going to do right now for the rest of the show, and then I'll stop talking about this, is it took me forever to figure out how to even access the menu so that you can update your iTunes. And I'm going to do what you have avoided doing your entire life, which is I am going to voluntarily update iTunes right now. So I will not be able... Do you want to hear any more buzzers or bells or anything one last time before I shut this down?
Do you have like any kind of turkey gobble to get me through?
Yeah,
by the way, I
was don't
gonna say turkey gobble.
Okay, there it was.
You
there
need to if you're truly gonna
I'm
get inside
it.
My brain, you've got to start to you got to mix it up more.
Yeah, I don't have
as soon as I can anticipate your turkey gobble, I can avoid it. See,
I know.
And then I've outwitted you.
I have two turkey gobbles here. Are they the same one? They are, huh? But two are, but two.
And yet, I still
one.
Can't find. I'll never be able to find. that Jim Harbaugh Jive Turkey tape. You might have it somewhere. I look for that on a probably twice a year basis, and I can never find it. Jive talking turkey gobbles,
gobble, gobble, gobble,
gobblers.
Turkey from Jive Turkey Gobblers, you know?
There it is.
I love that drop. Could you email that to me, sir? Before you shut down your computer, before you render your computer possibly bricked, could you send me that?
Yeah, because that's the other. That's the one last thing I'll say here is I'm also now having a weird glitch in my. This is something that just started during the show and is driving me crazy in my Chrome, which is my web browser. Like I have a whole system of little shortcut buttons along the top of my screen, and they're very important to me. They're how I navigate. I need a bunch of different things to get the show posted and quick access. Wherever I go now, like I'm heading to Cairo Radio later, I will log into their Chrome so that like all of my bookmarks follow me. It's very, very critical to my web using experience, which is my life experience. And for some reason, those are acting funny. They're like kind of disappearing randomly and then coming back. And so I'm wondering if the recent Windows 10 update messed with my computer. I also found out, as you sent me an email the other day, that hackers somehow got into my TBTL email. I don't know if you kind of realized that that's what happened. My TBTL email apparently was sending out spam, so I had to change my password on that recently. And I'm just wondering, remember when I clicked on something from your old producer at Livewire a long time ago and everybody's like, you're screwed, the hackers have got you, and it's been fine for the past year? I wonder if they were just laying in wait and like slowly everything is just gonna crumble down around me.
God, I feel like, should we take a break? If it's going to stress you out, and particularly with all of the post-show, like you said, hoops that you jump through every day to like put this thing on the internet and have all of the like metadata and descriptions and all of that work, I could see, if I were in your shoes, being stressed right now, because again, you are heading off to Ron and Don Town. Do we need to, I mean,
no,
are you
going
to be able to get through the show with this hanging over your head?
I mean, let's be honest. I'm going to be slightly distracted, and I'm probably going to update you from time to time as to the progress here. But I'm going to start by actually updating iTunes here, and then who knows if I'll ever get back online again. But anyway, that's the end of my list, Luke.
Well, that's okay. I'm going to take the heat off of you by getting into a topic that will probably sow seeds of enmity here at Burbank Springs within my very marriage. But it's a little
that's
thing
my wife.
I noticed Carrie doing yesterday, which is actually something that's been going on for a couple of days. So as I mentioned, we were trying to kind of get the swimming pool to. By the way, did you like that photo of me just floating in green?
Yeah, it looked
green.
Good.
I mean, it did not. It was as advertised, right? Like just me floating in a pea soup colored swimming pool. And in fact, I think that photo doesn't even fully do it justice. So we've been out there trying to fix that algae bloom, et cetera. And in the little, I guess you'd call it pool house. It's just like a tiny two room thing that has like the pumps and the filters and all that business in it. We've got like a box of just suntan lotion and sunscreen that has been thrown in there over the last few years. And on Monday, we were sitting out, Carrie and I, and DFTB showed up, and it was really sunny and warm, and certainly Carrie and I were both getting kind of a little sunburned. And I told her, I said, you got to put some more sunscreen on, and she said, well, this sunscreen isn't even working because it's expired. I thought of this because you were talking about expirations. Mm-hmm. And I thought in my mind, I was like, I don't really think sunscreen, I mean, I may have an expiration date on it, but does it really like expire? It's not like milk, right? Is it like one day it's blocking the sun and then like the next day it's just completely and totally ineffective?
It's like I'm walking on sunshine.
Well, if I can jump in really quickly and just tell you, it is true that if you drink expired suntan lotion or sunblock, you will get sick.
Yes. No, that's
explicit.
That's a well-known fact. Mm-hmm, okay. But so yesterday, and this is where I am probably going to regret saying this, because this is the kind of like, you know, we talk about our lives on the show all the time, but what I'm probably not supposed to do is just talk about subtle thoughts I've actually had while living my life here at the house before actually sharing those subtle thoughts with the person I'm having them about. But yesterday was a Gomi day here. It was garbage day. So we were taking the garbage out, wheeling it down to the street, collecting things up, cleaning up that pool house area. And I just noticed out of the corner of my eye, as I was wheeling the garbage cans down to the street, Carrie walking away from the pool house holding a bottle of sunscreen. And I'm almost certain, I'm whispering because I'm legit afraid of her overhearing this. I'm almost certain that she was going to throw out the sunscreen that was expired. And I had a whole conversation in my mind about, is it worth it? Is this the hill I want to die on? Whether or not this, like, and by the way, it's probably like a third of a container of suntan. It's lotion too. It's not the spray. Is this the hill I want to die on? Whether or not sunscreen can really expire, and if it makes any difference at all. And I decided no. That's what I decided yesterday, Andrew. But then today, apparently, I undecided that because now I'm talking about it on the show, and I'm going to probably catch a lot of hell for this later because this is petty and not good husbanding by me.
Well, let's just explore it a little bit if we can. Mm-hmm. That's a weird voice. What is driving this inside of you? It sounds like I'm trying to be your therapist. Maybe I am, but I'm also being honest. Is it driven from a sort of almost like a frugalness that you don't like to see things go to waste? Like, you know, Genevieve and I have this conversation daily about milk, right? The second it's even getting close to expiration date, I'm like, throw it away. And Genevieve's like, you don't even drink it. But I'm very, like, obsessed with expiration dates. But that usually has to do with food. And so that's, you know, whatever. There's a reason for it, even if I'm wrong. But for you, is it at all about the saving of the lotion, or is it just about the kind of you feel like you're right about something? And you kind of feel
it's more, well, sadly for everybody involved, it's more door number two, which is to say, like, I mean, it's probably $1.30 worth of suntan lotion. And we, you know, I certainly don't want to, I don't want to start accounting for each and every time I spend or waste $1.30 in this relationship. So it really isn't the money, but it's sort of, in my mind, the principle. I think it's the idea of being right. It's this idea of, like, here's my basic view of the world when it comes to things like sunscreen. I feel like, okay, if it's 20 years later, if aliens come down to the wreckage of Bellingham, Washington, and they're digging through the rubble and they find sunscreen that's 20 years or 40 years old, and they, like, take it out and they put it on their skin, it'll probably kill them, and then they've fallen into my trap, Andrew. I don't think it's like going to be good forever. But I don't think that, like, let's say it's the expiration date was March 14th, and now it's May 14th. I don't think it's suddenly ceased all efficacy because of a month. Because I just don't think that's not the half life of something like this in my mind. I have no evidence for that. I've done no research on the matter, but that's what my gut tells me. And when I think I'm right about something, as I've already talked about with my whole Twitter spat of last week, I have a very hard time letting that go, even though it doesn't matter. And I would say that in the times when I'm being a much better life partner and husband is when I'm better at letting shit go that doesn't matter. And the times when I'm a worse life partner and husband is when I can't let little things go.
The only other question I have for you is, when will my suntan lotion return from sea? All right.
By the way, somebody, Drew McFrizz sent me, because of me not being on Facebook, sent me a screen cap of somebody turning Rudy into a version of that meme.
How
and I
great
would just say,
is that?
Well played.
How
very,
great
very
is
well
that?
Played. Tip of the cap.
I'm sorry, my computer is doing all kinds of weird stuff right now. I would give a shout out to the person who made it, but I saw that is something that has gone, that got more likes than anything I've ever seen on the face on the stents.
Really?
Like, as of this morning, like, over 300 likes. It was very, very clever. And
I
well
can
done.
Tell you, it was Amelia Ann Flores, Ireland.
Nice. Way to go, Amelia. So
I
that
think Amelia
was...
lives in Bellingham.
Oh.
I believe she lives here in Bellingham, and her husband is a firefighter, and we hung out with them at one of the events and had a wonderful time. Could be thinking of a different Amelia, but I think that's the one I'm thinking of, and it's like a extremely good spoof, Amelia.
Yeah. Anyway, we're all over the place, and I realize, like, I actually do want to ask you how you feel about yesterday's recording a little bit, and I know we should
okay.
thank some dazzling donors, and we have a lot of
For
stuff
For the record,
to do.
By the way, the Mayo Clinic says sunscreen that has an expiration date should be thrown out after its expiration date. But they're the Mayo Clinic. I mean, they're like notoriously no fun.
They name themselves after a condiment.
Exactly.
I think I'm going to go elsewhere.
I mean,
for my
Best
medical
Foods
advice.
Clinic, maybe. Yeah. Maybe I'll listen to what they have to say. Oh, that was a decent spoof. We got there.
We got
somehow.
There. All right.
I don't know how.
So
what you're saying is you would like us to thank a dazzling donor.
On your mark.
Get set.
Get set.
Now ready.
Ready.
Go.
Everybody rattle.
Let's thank a dazzling donor, and then we'll do a debrief, a post-mort on yesterday's public radio audition, and then we'll play this DFTB tape. That may be all the time we've got here. We would be so remiss, though, if we didn't take a moment to honor today's dazzling donor, which, of course, as many of you know, as the rumors that have been swirling about are in fact true, it's Steve Gehring. Mm. Steve writes, Gehring, pronounced like herring, not hearing or boring, and Steve is pronounced Worcester, as in Worcestershire. Steve says, well, first of all, let me just remind people of what Steve's generous contribution was. He's dazzled us with a donation starting last TBTL-a-thon. At least we know that last TBTL-a-thon, that's how far back our records go. He made a dazzling donation, very generous donation, and big part of how we're able to do the show. And thank you, Steve, for doing that. It means a huge amount to us. I mean, financially, emotionally, just on so many levels. He's got a 54-word message, Andrew, that he would like us to actually, I guess, read.
How many words?
54 words. Mm.
Can you just cut off the last song four to make it an easy, like a simple 50? Can you just do
get
that
it down
for
to
me?
A tight 50?
If you don't mind.
Okay, let's see. No, because I'm looking at the message, and the last four words are really pivotal. Okay. If we don't do the last four words, it'll just say, please leave a.
I love it.
And then will people know what to do?
It's chaos. I'm trying to introduce more chaos into exactly. The dazzling donor segment.
There's actually Steve's got a couple of requests. One, he says, last year, the guys were nice enough to wish my son, Theo, good luck at University of Mary Washington, where he just finished his freshman year. Congratulations, Theo. And it worked. He had a great year and joined an amazing a cappella group, The One Note Stand. By the way, not to be confused with this show, which is The One Note Show, as in pretty much stick to the same topics and hot takes day in and day out. They've recorded a song, it would appear, Andrew. He says this song is their first studio recording, and he would like us to play a song from The One Note Stand, an a cappella group from the University of Mary Washington, where weirdly, Theo pronounces his last name Gehring.
Hey.
I don't know why. I mean, that may speak to a certain distance that's been created between Steve and his son. It's very possible that, you know, Theo moves away to college, starts to really just want to kind of identify and establish his own kind of personality. And so he's going with Gehring.
It actually, on my copy, it says it's pronounced Gorster.
Oh, that is a pretty good spoof. Have you noticed that I've apparently lost my pretty good spoof audio? It's been replaced with this one.
Not believe he just told that joke.
That's probably better, actually.
Anyway, we'll go out with, unless I forget, and try to play some other song as has been common practice here, we'll go out with a song from a One Note Stand. Okay, so here's where the 54-word request comes in. Steve says, I was hoping Luke and Andrew could read this. It's for my voicemail. It's only 54 words, and it's free advertising for the show. Anyway, if they can only play the song, that would still be awesome. But if they can read the email message, that would be cool too. So here's what it is. He wants us to record the outgoing message for his voicemail. Now, here's what I'm wondering, Andrew. If we just do this right now here on the show, I wonder if Steve has the technology to lift this off of the TBTL broadcast, or if we need to, do we need to send it to him too? Like, I'm getting into the least interesting part of this, but I'm just wondering if
pulling a real
Andrew audio
here.
Hijack.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he can probably grab it himself. If not, I am happy to help. I do not want Lin Pham, our unofficial archivist,
Lin, you've done enough,
he has to do it. My guess is he would probably step up and offer to, but he doesn't have to. I am happy to clip it out and send it to Steve, too. So, Steve, get at me if you need me to send it to you.
So let's do this here. Okay, we've got the script in front of us. Looks like it. Okay, so maybe I start and then you jump in, but then how do we divide these lines up?
What if you do all of the reading and I just sing doo-wop music in the background?
I feel like...
see, I'm already
It's a really good way to make Steve a one-time dazzling donor and not a repeat dazzling donor.
I started
he's
too high.
Asked, he's at a very... He's made a very simple request. By the way, also, Steve, thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your donation. And thank you for perking up my spirits here on this Wednesday when I've taken a certain amount of negging that I don't need to get into on the air. I was talking about it with Andrew off air. Nothing to do with my Twitter beefs, by the way. Unrelated negging. Which is a decent show title, by the way. Unrelated negging.
I'll write it down.
But, Steve, you're perking up my spirits because – while no one has requested me as their outgoing message on their Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me voicemail, you know, the new thing on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is if you win one of the contests, you can have anybody from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me record the outgoing message on your voicemail. Used to be Carl Castle, and now that Carl Castle has gone to that big broadcast booth in the sky, it's any of us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Luke Burbank, still clocking in at Zero requests. So
even I got one, and I've never been on that show. That's weird.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
So anyway, this is the closest I'll get to that. And so I appreciate Steve. I really appreciate you. Really appreciate you making this request.
I have an idea how to break this up.
Okay.
So if you don't mind, I am going to start it right. Up.
Okay.
And by the way, okay, I was actually, for a second, all joking aside, I had to remember that it's Herring. It's Garing. And it rhymes with Garing. I'm going to read everything up into my name, and then you take over where it says, and Luke Burbank.
Okay.
And then you read up into the parentheses. Read what's in the parentheses, and then you finish it out. You take us home.
Love it.
You got it?
What's our energy level, though? That's the big question.
See, I feel like, okay, so you just got off a cruise ship. You forgotten your passport.
Okay, got it.
But you got it.
But I was allowed onto the cruise ship because you went and broke into Jessica's house.
By the way, I've heard a new wrinkle in that story from your friends. I've heard this twice now with you not in the room.
Been talking about me behind
my back. A new wrinkle in that story that maybe you did tell me originally and I forgot it. But... and I'm not going to reset up. I'm not going to, as Don O'Neill would have me do, I'm not going to frame this whole story again.
You can see me in Bellingham right now. I'm drawing an invisible frame.
With your fingertips. Yep. But for those who know the story of Luke trying to get on a cruise ship with a bunch of friends, but he forgot his passport, I had to run. I guess I'm framing it. I had to get into the house of a mutual friend where he had left his passport, and I had to FedEx it to you as fast as possible. So I guess
and send photographic evidence that it was being FedExed.
Oh, that's
so that
what it was,
the guy
right.
would literally sneak us through the back door onto the cruise ship,
and then
illegally
right,
flaunting right. international law.
Because you, that's right, you couldn't wait around to get it, no matter how fast that courier was. So anyway. All of this is happening. Meanwhile, all of your other friends, they have their passports. They're doing other things. They're waiting in line. They're having photos taken of themselves professionally by the cruise ship photographer. I saw those photos, which raised this conversation. What I did not realize was, even though you were the bad boy who didn't remember to bring his note, you ended up getting on the ship first. While they were still waiting in line with the huddled masses, they're still like, oh, will Luke ever get on? We don't know. We don't know. We don't know. Okay. And they're just waiting and waiting. Meanwhile, you're getting special treatment because you're escorted onto the boat and then you're texting them from your room. What do you call a room on a ship? From your
cabin?
From your cabin. Hey guys, I'm in my cabin now. It's really nice in here. When are you guys getting on the ship? Now, I don't think that you were taunting. Nobody accused you of like actually taunting them.
There may have been a little.
Maybe you were taunting.
I mean, you know what it was? Okay, so yes, that is how things went because basically, in order for them to get us onto the ship, because we did not have the proper letters of transit, as they would say in Casablanca, this guy Sweeney had to just like kind of usher us through a series of kind of back doors, which did move us around the line. I was so relieved to be on the boat because we had, I mean, it was looking like we were not going to, we'd been told we weren't going to, I wasn't going to be able to get on the boat. I was so relieved that I think just getting into the boat, I almost had like a kind of a massive release of endorphins. So I was taking pictures, I think, of our cabin and sending to them, almost like not trying to rub it in, but just trying to kind of celebrate, like, oh my God, it happened. At least that's what I think my emotional state was. When I was rubbing it in was when Carrie and I went down to the bar and ordered a couple of drinks and were enjoying them in a leisurely fashion as everybody else from our group, about an hour later, tired, hot, sweaty, dragged their luggage through the main part of the cruise ship to go to their rooms. And Carrie and I were just like maybe into our, at that point, second drink, just luxuriating. When I looked up to them and I raised a glass,
oh,
that might
God.
Have been me rubbing it in just a little bit.
You bastard. That story, by the way, is the most Burbanky story possible. That you're the
That's right.
You're the one who almost held up the whole thing. You did it wrong.
I didn't almost hold up the whole thing. Well, I mean, they were just going to go without me, and I wouldn't have blamed them. Yeah, you're right.
Hey, I have
Life's
some,
not fair.
I have some fantastic news for you. I updated iTunes. Everything is working fine. Now, I have to get a little bit used to the new, you know, look here on iTunes, but it solved that weird-ass problem I was having. I also did fix my my Chrome issue. It was unrelated. Something just got turned off. Everything is back to normal. We're back, baby. I can't. It never ends like that, especially when I'm trying to fix it on the fly. This is like Christmas and what is it? May.
I love it, man.
Christmas in late May.
Love it, man. So now are you ready to do listener Steve's outgoing voicemail message?
Yes. Boop, boop, okay. Boop. Oh, wait. No, we're not doing the one where I sing. Okay. So I'm going to start here.
In what universe has boop ever been a lyric to a song? That was very roboto.
Scoop diddy boop.
Poop diddy boop scoop.
Yeah, exactly. How could I have posed that question when I play a drop from a song that basically has that in it? All right. Let's get to it. I'm going to follow your lead.
In 3, 2, 1. Hi, you've reached the voicemail of Steve Gehring. This is Andrew Walsh.
And Luke Burbank from the podcast Too Beautiful to Live, a.k.a. TBTL. Google it and have a listen.
Steve recommends it highly, but we'd prefer that you keep your expectations low.
In the meantime, please leave a message at the tone.
Poop diddy whoop scoop. Poop.
Beep. I'm not sure if phones still make their own beep, so I just wanted to get it in there. You can cut that beep off if you want to.
I think that went well. I'm assuming that Steve might just pull this whole show as his outgoing message, like the entire episode.
That's a way to get somebody to never leave you a message again.
Exactly. It's a life hack. Speaking of which, let's do this just because.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Because we're 13 minutes from the river. Our top story today, let's just say that it's a a look back on our audition tape that we made yesterday for WBUR in Boston. Andrew, I just want to say thank you for your hard work on that. Because we recorded with a couple of listeners, listener Corey and listener Grace. We recorded a fair bit, but then you trimmed it down.
Yeah, big
so you
time.
Put a lot of work in yesterday to kind of make it to make it a little bit more succinct, flow a little better, etc. You shipped it off. I listened to it this morning, and I've got some thoughts on the whole thing. But I'd like to get your thoughts first, since you were the one who really crafted this thing. How are you feeling about our audition for Public Radio Weekend Stardom?
Here's the deal. I think my part was really good. Well, that's about that about wraps up my thoughts. No, here's what I wanted to say about it. I was torn a little bit. We were doing this as part of an episode of TBTL, but I was also, of course, as you know, submitting it to WBUR, and they said when you submit a sample, submit about a 10-minute sample Or if it's longer than that, if it's like part of a podcast you're already doing and you send us the whole thing, just make sure that you want us to hear the first 10 minutes, like that it's front loaded with whatever you want us to hear. We're not going to be fast forwarding. We're not listening to your half hour podcast, whatever. So
we're not listening to you leave a voicemail message, outgoing message for Steve Gehring, et cetera.
Beep. Now that's the end of your voicemail, Steve. Thank you so much for donating to TVTL. So I was a little bit torn, like Natalie Imbruglia. And we recorded with two guests. Anybody who heard yesterday's show knows this. We recorded with two people, Grace and Corey, yesterday, talking about their life hacks or their requests for life hacks.
And by the way, that would be Grace and Corey, not someone named Grayson Corey. The only reason you need to clarify that is because 80% of the male children in America are named Grayson.
I didn't know that.
And the other 20% are named Caden.
Like kids who are about 10 years old now, or the new babies?
No, more like 7, 8.
Okay.
There was a real Caden.
Grayson.
A friend of ours has got a nephew named Bladen, which is that's a custom model. That's an aftermarket. You got to buy that special and fit that on the baby, Bladen. But anyway, keep going.
Is there any chance I can call the show Grayson Under Fire for today?
Yeah, there's a pretty good chance.
I'm writing that down. So I was a little bit torn because I wanted to use a longer version in the actual podcast, a little bit more TBTL-y, a little bit rambly when we're talking to our guests. We went on some spoofs with them that I was cutting out for WBUR because I wanted to, I'm a rule follower. And also, it's like this idea that I want to show that, yeah, we understand that what you're looking for is not a rambly podcast, but this is what an actual kind of pre-taped call-in show on this topic would actually sound like.
Yeah, they specifically said we want to hear how it would be different than TBTL.
Yeah, exactly.
So our approach was to just do an episode of TBTL and send it in.
So what I was going to do was include a longer, more TBTL-y version for the podcast, because why not? Like, yesterday's show did not make it to the river, man. Even with the music, we were at like 50-some minutes because I edited it down so much. But the thing was, we're mostly doing this for our TBTL listeners, and I wanted them to hear exactly what we sent WBUR. Maybe I made the wrong decision. Maybe I should have like let our TBTL listeners hear the longer, more fat version of what we did. Less lean is maybe what I'm looking for. But I figured, you know what? No, if we're going to talk about this on the show, I want them to know exactly what we sent to WBR. So what you guys heard yesterday was the exact sample up until we say goodbye to our second guest. Luke and I then go on and talk about whether or not we will use onion goggles, and that I did not include in the piece. So I wanted to make that clear to you and everybody. And then the other thing I wanted to say was I was pretty proud of it. Like, you and I came up with this concept when we were driving, and down to Austin a year ago, and we've talked about it on the show and off the show, and this was our first proof of concept, as everybody seems to like to say these days. And it sounded very, with some exceptions, you were in Bellingham, I'm here, we're not really in radio studios, but like, it was pretty close to what I was thinking we would sound like using these life hacks as a way of like actually just talking to people and getting to know them a little bit,
right?
Talking about interpersonal relationships. The both callers, Grayson and Corey, were
Grayson and Bladen
were fantastic.
I think both callers were just exactly what we would be hoping the callers would be like, were it to be a real radio show. Just like, yeah, all of the funny, self-aware, engaged, et cetera, et cetera. So we got really lucky that both of the Graysons really hit it out of the park.
I liked who did you like better, Grayson or Grayson?
Ooh, that's a tough call.
I know, they
I'd
were
say
different.
Probably
they
Grayson.
Different. Yeah, I liked Grayson. And my only regret is that I didn't have a little bit more time to edit. I spent probably 2 hours, do you think? Well, why would you know? Like an hour and a half maybe I spent editing that before I shipped it off to WBUR. And I wish for something that is heavily edited, and by our standards that was more heavily edited than obviously anything we ever do on the show, I like to be able to sit with the tape a little bit, maybe go for a walk, come back with fresh ears and listen to it again. There are a few edits that seemed a little rushed to me. It didn't. It, at times, my own
because
edits
I sit with it
took me out of the conversation a little bit because I could hear where I edited it. I don't think there were bad edits necessarily, but just a couple of pacing things. I'm obsessed with pacing, so there were a couple of those things that I was just like, oh, I wish I had a little bit more time to kind of work on those. But aside from that, I was happy. All right, that was a really boring postmort, but I wanted to get it
not
all out
at
there.
All. Well, not for me. And let's be honest, that's what this whole thing is about.
Yeah.
I listened to it this morning, and I agree with pretty much everything you said. Again, the calls were great.
Oh, you thought my pacing
I thought we
sucked?
Had fun. No, I thought the pacing was just fine. You know what though? Like, so Carrie was sitting in the living room listening to it with me, and said, "I was like, well, what did you think? Well, actually, God, I'm gonna try to remember." How did this unfold exactly?
She was slathering sunscreen on her arms.
Expired sunscreen. The fact that I can't remember the specific thing right now is going to really, really ruin this this great anecdote I was going to share. But we had a bunch of things going on where I was playing basically the section of the show for her that was I knew was submitted to BUR. And then there was something else happening. I forget what it was, but she said, "Oh man, that's a good show." And I was like, "Our audition is a good show." And then she went like, "No, I was talking about like something else that we had been discussing." She was referencing a different thing that was a good show.
Oh,
but she said, but she also said that she thought our audition tape was good. But she said to me, "Yeah, you know, it sort of sounds like TBTL." And I said, "The crazy part about that is you're right. It does sound like TBTL. But Andrew cut out a crazy amount of stuff. Like, and it still sounds like TBTL." And so here's where I'm going with this. Like, I think that it was a good 10 minutes. I think it was an entertaining 10 minutes of or whatever it was, 15 minutes, 18 minutes. The amount of time it was, I thought it was an interesting show. It's the kind of show I would listen to on the radio or listen to as a podcast. And it's the kind of show, ultimately, Andrew, that I would want to make.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that WBUR is going to say, this is what we're looking for. I think they're going to listen to it. And by the way, this gets it out of a couple of jams anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going to listen to it. And the general consensus is going to be, this is rambling. This is not nearly tight enough. It doesn't feel like it's going anywhere.
You think
because, of
so.
Course, that's what – well, I don't – by the way, please understand, none of that is a criticism
No. Yeah, no, I'm
or
just
your
interested
pacing,
in this. Yeah.
Or any of the Graysons who call into the show on a regular basis. I think that in listening to it, even after you had trimmed it way down, even when it was easily 80% more focused than your typical 20 minutes of TBTL conversation – it still sounded comparatively meandering. Like it sounded like our pacing. I'm talking about like literally the way we talk, the jokes we make, and the lack of – here's what it is. I guess a lack of urgency. By the way, no one's ever said that public radio suffers from too much urgency. But I do think that what happens is most of the shows you hear are edited so – they're edited down so much, and most of the stuff people are saying is pre-written – that it's like you're always going somewhere. Like if they're reading an intro on All Things Considered, or if Shankar Vedantham is on Hidden Brain is talking about a research project that happened, it's all – or Guy Raz on the TED Radio Hour. It's all very like – I don't know how to explain it other than to say it does not feel like it's meandering, and it does not feel like it's just kind of like, well, we're going to see what happens here. Now the irony – is that that's what I think was great about how Car Talk, the show that we would be one of the groups trying to effectively replace. The fact that I think Car Talk had that quality, or at least they did a good job of creating the feeling of that quality, is an irony in all of this. Like, in other words, I think when they listen to our tape, they will say, yeah, this is just the pacing of this and the whole vibe is a little bit aimless for us. But I actually think that what was great about Car Talk was that it felt at times sort of aimless.
It's funny that you say that, because my thoughts when I was trying to listen to it with their ears, I was thinking not
the ears
that
of a child
and never mind. I was trying to pull out
the hide of an elephant.
Yeah, I don't know. Bean sent me a drop is something that I actually heard on the Kevin and Bean show that I thought was hilarious from like The Bachelor. And every now and then, and you know, I don't know anything about these Bachelor shows, and I heard it on his show, and I asked him to send it to me.
I view the world through the eyes of a child. You know, I have the heart of a warrior and the spirit of a gypsy.
You've played that before. I love it.
I sneak it in every now and then. It has no connection to our show at all. That's
why.
By the way, I got
a great. I don't have to play it right now, but I got a great, great airplane drop from one of these televangelists who's trying to get his followers to donate $54 million so he can buy like a fancy Gulfstream jet. He was talking to one of the guys is Kenneth Copeland. Another guy is, I forget his name, Jesse Duplantis, I think is his name. And he,
oh, yeah,
Copeland
Mumblecore.
And Duplantis, they've both got, I got that joke, by the way.
Yeah, it was bad.
Both of them have fancy jets, but they want a fancier jet. And they were on one of their televangelist TV talk shows talking about why they need fancier jets, because they need to be able to hear Jesus talk to them while they're in the air. And if they stand up on a regular plane, it won't be okay. Like if they're flying commercial and they just hear the Lord talking to them and they get up and start saying, "What, Jesus?" Everyone's going to look at them funny. So then one of them said basically this about trying to fly commercial.
In a long tube with a bunch of demons.
Right. That's exactly the
point. It's deadly.
He described an airplane as a long tube full of demons, and it's deadly.
If I can find my original like master tracks of the Sky Jinx Woo, I would be happy to try to work that in.
In a long tube with a bunch of demons.
Right. That's exactly the
point. And it's deadly.
Send that my way.
The whole conversation is gold. Anyway, back to what you were saying.
So, okay, let's use this diversion actually as a perfect example of what I was about to say, which is what we're doing right now, what we've been doing this entire episode. And I don't know if our core TBTL listeners like this style of show or dislike it, but today is a good example of us not being able to stay on topic at all, truly rambly, right, all over the place.
What are you doing here?
You hear it. I don't need to add any more adjectives to it.
Right. You're doing on this show is awful for humanity.
What we turned in yesterday, I was going to say, trying to listen to it through the eyes of the child and the spirit of a gypsy warrior. Got there. Listening through the ears of the WBUR people who some of them worked on Car Talk and have expressly kind of said we're looking for something to kind of fill that hole in our schedule, not somebody to imitate it. I was worried that it's pretty clear that you and I are doing a pale imitation of the Car Talk guys, sort of. Just like, honestly, like, because I mean, we hit on those things. We're trying to offer advice or in some cases get advice, hear personal stories, but really, you know, dive into people's relationships, talk to people and kind of get a view into their world. Like it just there were other aspects of Car Talk, like the games they played and riddles and stuff like that we would not mess with. But when you got into the actual caller section, I was thinking it didn't seem rambly to me because I edited that down. I'm having trouble talking today. I edited that down to about 18 minutes, I think. So, or maybe it was whatever. I think it was like two segments that were about 8 minutes long, which seems like that was about the pacing of Car Talk, I think. And you would be able to fit that into your standard weekend clock wheel, I think. So,
wow.
Anyway,
that's, what if that you was need to sweep thought. The quarter hour? So your thought, your take on it was that, if anything, we sound too much like a pre-existing public radio show, a.k.a. Car Talk.
Not that we sound like it, but we're clearly overly influenced by it. And they might just be like, another couple of guys trying to be Car Talk, and you're not Car Talk, guys. Go home. That's how they would talk to us, disrespectfully.
The thing I was going to say about it, though, was even though my gut was a little different on it, and that I thought that they would just be sort of like, when is this going to get to the – like, when does the show really start happening? Which is a common question from people who are guests on the program midway through the show is, yeah, are we doing the show yet? Is this the show? Even though my guess is that will be their reaction, I'm fine in them deciding that this is not the show for them, because what we sent to them is the show I would want to make, if that makes any sense. Like, I think part of it is you and I both have worked in public radio for a long time, and we both worked on a lot of different kinds of shows, and we both still have the instinct, very close to the surface, of how to public radio something up. And so when I'm listening to it, I'm hearing a bunch of ways in which we're not public radioing it up, And so, and again, my instinct is to want to like make it sound, weirdly enough, for all the big talk I do about how we want to be our own thing, we don't want to sound like everybody else, there's some weird insecure part of me that when I'm listening to something that I know is supposed to be ultimately on public radio, I want to like, which by the way, I say that a million times, we work for a public radio entity. This show is literally part of a public radio entity. So just, I understand that. But anyway, point is, I have all these weird instincts of wanting to just be like, ooh, we could have edited that, or we could have put in some music there. Do we have any Philip Glass that we could weave in here? Like all of the tropes.
Where's my Moby? And, I need my Moby.
Right? All of the tropes that I'm kind of over and kind of don't like, but when I'm not hearing them in there, I actually notice them, which is, by the way, just internalized public radio self-loathing that I've done. And then also I have to remind myself that like I don't want to make one of those shows. Like, so if they turn this thing down, which I'm 99% sure they will, that's okay, because this is the show I would want to make. So if it's not the show for them, then that's fine. Everything has worked itself out. Because like I said, my instinct was to on some level be like, well, if we just did this, that, and the other and changed a lot about this and made it less like TBTL and more like On the Media, which is a fine, fine show, or more like, you know, whatever popular public radio show is out there, then we'd get to the next level. But it's like, would I then want to be sitting in those interminable like show meetings where everyone's sitting around going like, oh, we can't talk about that because Morning Edition did it, or the New York Times did it. Like those meetings that you and I have been in so many times are honestly the most, that's a death eater for you right there. That'll death eat you. Just being in the actual world of public radio, typical public radio show production. So that's a long Moby-infused way of me proving that I know what a Death Eater is now, because someone emailed us.
Is it just me, or was this song used all the time when I was coming up in public radio? Or was it was the station I worked for? Because we used this all the time. I used to make these
fundraising stuff. It was used a lot because it was like, yeah, because it was like a cool hip song, but it was mostly instrumental.
Yeah.
So it was like it was a great way to show as a producer that you were kind of in the cool crowd, but still satisfy the requirements of a public radio drop, or I should say bump song, which is like limited vocals.
Let me ask you this last question, because I really want to hear your David tape. Yeah. Should I resubmit the 18 minutes I sent, but put the
short
Moby
answer, yes.
Moby underneath the entire thing?
What about just me singing, "Hey, woman"? Is that song called "Hey, Woman"? What is he? What is it? Somebody just saying "woman" in the background?
The song is called "Porcelain."
Oh, there's a lot of more words than I remember.
I've never heard this far into it. I honestly haven't. When we were starting Press Play down at KCRW with Madeline Brand, I remember our very first show, we got a montage of people, I think maybe giving us advice on how to start something new. I can't remember exactly what the idea behind it was, but we tried to get like the mayor sent us something in. I remember Moby sent us something as well. Something.
Have I told you my weird Moby story?
No.
When I was covering Congress for NPR, I was walking up to like the House of Representatives one day to go to work, and Moby is just standing in like on a lawn there with like zero fanfare around him. It's just actually Moby, and I'm like, what? And then standing with Moby, and I just want to mention that I didn't know about any of this. None of this was planned out. Standing next to Moby was a woman. I want to say her name is Jennifer, who was a dear friend of my former fiance and girlfriend Vanessa, who was working with Moby to try to shoot essentially like a viral video about net neutrality. So just understand the weirdness of this. It's Moby, who I don't know, standing with this woman Jennifer, who I do know, but who I didn't know was going to be there and who didn't know I was going to be there, and there's nobody else around,
and just nobody knows what net neutrality is.
Just still to add to this
it,
day,
just to add to it.
And so then I just sit there and I'm like talking to her and Moby just casually on the lawn. To me, it wasn't just that it was Moby. And by the way, that nobody recognized him. It was that he was partnered with a person who I knew from a completely other context, like a totally unrelated part of my life, was hanging out with Moby on the lawn in front of where I worked. And they were there basically to just try to, like, I think the plan was supposed to be like, so some normal person's talking to somebody else about net neutrality, and then Moby was going to, like, sneak up behind a tree like spaghetti or something and, like, shock them. But, like, the problem was – people don't have – most people don't know really what Moby looks like. So it's not – in fact, it was eerily similar to spaghetti, in that spaghetti would just be behind the plant for, like, a long time. It wasn't like Moby jumping out from behind a tree is not the same as, like, a Jimmy Fallon jumping out from behind a tree, or, you know, someone else who's like a Zac Efron or something. Like, he's not famous enough by sight to have the reaction that they were looking for,
right,
to make this viral video, if that makes any sense.
They should have gotten this guy.
Oh, God. The voiceover on that. The voiceover of that skit, because, of course, that's fashioned after those real TV shows where it's like, we're about to play a trick on a guy. He doesn't know what is going to hit him. The voice, the fake announcer voiceover is so spot on. I mean, it's one of the top five delights of my life.
Let me just play a couple more seconds of this, then we got to get to David.
Okay.
These two office workers are planning ahead for their weekly staff meeting, but what they can't possibly plan for is a surprise visit from Spaghetti. Let's watch.
They don't know how to react, and everybody is just,
that's great,
standing around awkwardly. Yeah. Okay.
And then there's the part of that where Spaghetti starts talking about net neutrality,
yeah,
which really,
that's my favorite part,
further confuses those guys. So let's, now that we're 11 minutes past the river, let's get to the nitty gritty. Yesterday was Starbucks training day. That is, by the way, the day when all Starbucks employees ride around in a car with Denzel Washington, and learn about being a crooked cop in
perk.
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You wet. That's a line from Training Day that Camaro Kev likes to say. You get wet. So anyway, I totally forgot as I was reading about this yesterday that my own actual brother, longtime TBTL contributor and trusted advisor, DFTB, works for Starbucks in the mall at Bellis Fair in Bellingham and would, of course, be in this meeting. A couple of quick things. First of all, when the news first came out, I interpreted it to be – the news came out, I should say, that Starbucks was going to shut all of its stores down to have a training meeting about trying to confront implicit bias and maybe explicit bias. After an incident in Philadelphia where two African-American men were arrested for just being in the Starbucks. I assumed that all the Starbucks across the country were going to shut down all day. Like, there would be no Starbucks to be had, no coffee to be had. But it was actually half the day. So they shut down at like 2 o'clock, which is still not it's not an expensive endeavor for Starbucks. They won't say, by the way, how much they think this cost them. But the mind reels, even for half a day, about how expensive it must have been. I also was wondering, were they going to, like, get everyone together and, like, show a teleconference or something? Or, like, how was this going to work? What was the practical – how was this going to play out on a practical level? And, anyway, DFTB went to it yesterday. I called him up a couple of hours ago during his 10-minute break while he was working at the Starbucks. And here's what he said. Take a listen to this.
Ahoy, hoy.
DFTB.
How's it going, brother?
Good, man. How's your morning?
Good. I just got finished cleaning the whole store, doing floors, as we call it. So that was good. Got some good mopping in, and smell like dirt and bleach. So I'm doing good.
Did it feel measurably less racist there today?
Did, you know, it was just something in the air that felt very less biased, very unbiased. I did actually had several customers so far already today have asked about the meeting, the training yesterday, and they, you know, a lot of them are old people, so they seem a little suspicious of it, I think, probably. And,
wait, you mean they were asking about it because they thought it was a bad thing?
No, they were asking about it because we were closed yesterday, and so they were wondering what it was all about. And just as I had sort of talked about it or explained it to them, they would, I could see the look on their face a little bit. Maybe that's making a judgment call on them, which I'm not supposed to make a judgment call. That was the whole point of the training, was to not pass judgment because of what someone looks like, I guess.
Well, speaking of which, let's just start at the beginning. So you were part of, I don't know how many, is it in the hundreds of thousands of Starbucks employees? I don't know how many people work for Starbucks who went to this kind of mandatory anti-bias training yesterday because of the thing that had happened in Philly, I guess. Right. What did they actually, you know, I know you're on your break, so you don't have a whole lot of time, but like sort of what did they have you guys do? Like, did they bring in a trainer, or was there a video from the guys in Philly who got kicked out of the Starbucks? Like, what was the thing?
It was basically we met up with one other store, and we sort of met up in an empty Starbucks store, locked ourselves in there with some pizza and sodas and coffee, and we got into little group sort of sessions, and we each had an iPad, and on the iPad we watched basically videos from Howard Schultz, videos from other Starbucks executives kind of admitting the wrongdoing of the partners who were the partner in specific in Philadelphia who had done the terrible thing and been so biased, and along with other guests in the videos, like, you know, different civil rights activists. And,
is it true that Common was one of them?
Yeah, which was pretty ridiculous. We all kind of cracked up at that, which was interesting because I think I speak for all the other partners when I say, like, the videos themselves, besides Common's parts, which were a little bit comical, they were actually pretty well done, pretty thoughtful. They brought up some interesting conversations within our group, and I think it was overall a pretty well received thing. I think it also helped that we were getting paid to do the training. We got, you know, free food while we were doing it. We got to do it with all of our fellow coworkers. It was a pretty good environment to do something like that. And overall, I do think it was really successful. We did. Sorry, they're doing the floor cleaning in the mall, so I don't know if that's super loud or not. But it was overall definitely a very, if not successful, at least productive training. You know, I don't know if anyone specifically in any store in the Northwest area, any Starbucks store, would have been prejudiced in any way.
See, that's what I'm kind of curious about, because
pretty progressive.
Yeah, because it's like it feels like, I mean, again, I think it was obviously it cost Starbucks a ton of money to do this, and I think it, I mean, you could argue that it's definitely not enough, but you can't say that it's a negative they tried to do something. And yet I was also wondering, like, for you, I mean, and most of the people you work with at the mall Starbucks in Bellingham, it's like, I mean, were you guys suspicious of people, of potential customers, and now you're not suspicious because of these videos and stuff?
Right. No, but it did, you know, it did talk more even about more than just a racial bias and racial issues. It also went on to, you know, really trying hard to not misidentify people based on their gender or even gendering anyone in particular. You know, it brought up an issue which I've been having often with my customer service, which is I am so used to calling people sir and ma'am because I'm just trying to be polite. I feel like it's a, you know, it's a it's an expression of respect.
And by the way, I still want you to refer to Carrie and I as sir and ma'am around the house. That is unchanged.
Which I do, and I feel weird about it. That it's like it's so automatic when you're like BFTV, and I'm like, yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'm like, why am I calling you sir?
Yeah. Respect.
But,
that's why.
But I find it's those are very gender terms, and so I don't want to ever assume a customer is a sir or a ma'am. And so I'm definitely trying to cut back on how much I say that, unless they're a pretty obviously one gender, you know, if they're an older person, like, you know, a lot of the old people that, that walk in the mall here and come up to Starbucks, I'm sure they are not offended by me calling them ma'am or sir, but just being situational about it and trying to really respect someone's fluidity and their non-binariness.
Did you feel like the video that Howard, so it sounds like one thing was they were, all of this video production that you guys watched sounds like it was recently recorded and produced. Like they made this stuff pretty much after the Philadelphia incident.
What it seemed like. They did reference the incident a couple times. So that leads me to believe that all of the production was probably done afterwards.
Did Howard Schultz seem genuine in the video that he did?
He did. You know, I have a hard time looking at his face.
Yeah, I know. Did he mention the Sonics? Did he mention a time he ran into a guy in Madison Park who had hate in his eye? Who had a lot of hate going, but it wasn't racial. It was just based on him losing our basketball team?
No, but he did seem very sincere, and everyone in the video seemed very sincere, and they did a really good job of gathering, you know, civil rights advocates and different advocates for different issues and sort of getting takes from everyone, and the video format was sort of a round table as it was. So like there was someone who was sort of moderating this round table of these different people who are store managers at different big Starbucks stores or executives at Starbucks or civil rights activists there were a lot of ideas bouncing back and forth, and it acted as a nice catalyst for our little mini group discussions. So again, I think it was pretty tastefully done, actually.
Cool. And you feel like you got to have some good conversations with your coworkers, regardless of if your particular Starbucks was a hotbed of bias. It was just like to have conversations about this is useful.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And like learning. Even if you're not specifically learning something new or feeling like you need to change behavior, it's like to have that dialogue going and to have that now front of mind, that's going to be front of mind with every Starbucks interaction I have for the next several weeks, I'm sure. If not going forward for, you know, the rest of the time I'm at Starbucks, it's going to be in the back of my head that like people are on alert for Starbucks baristas not treating them well. And so we have to sort of even be more cautious about how we're interacting with people and making sure that people, even if they're not buying something, that they feel welcome in the store and that they feel like they are a customer and that they have a as they kept on calling it, the third place, which is like a place of gathering, a place of feeling comfortable there. And so even if they come in and they just get a water, like it's no skin off any of us partners back to just let them have the water and let them sit and be present in that place and not feel like they are being attacked or feeling like they're being pushed out of the store in any way.
What if somebody orders a unicorn frappuccino? Can you judge them silently in your head?
I can, because we don't have any of those ingredients, so don't come looking through your fucking unicorn frappuccino. And guess what? It tastes the exact same as a vanilla bean frappuccino. So just get that, please.
What's the... Okay, you still have like 4 hours or whatever left in your shift. What's the drink that you least... What's the drink that you are hoping does not get ordered between now and the end of your shift?
We've got these new... we call them the Lux frappuccinos.
Lux,
so there's a
frappuccino.
Triple mocha frappuccino and an ultra caramel frappuccino, and they have whipped cream and drizzle stuff on the bottom of the cup and on top of the frappuccino. And so it just adds an extra step to the process, and it's a special kind of whipped cream. And so I dislike making those, but the thing is, they're so fucking delicious. Like they are the best thing you've ever drank before. And they're also like 3,000 calories or something crazy. But of those I would say I don't like making, but I understand why people get them because right. they're really freaking tasty.
You can't hate on them. What's the other highlight of the mall? Is there some other place that you like? Would you go to the Orange Julius on your break when you're not doing an interview on TBTL? Do you go down to like Forever 21? Like, what's your like mall? What's your mall deal when you're there on a break?
I don't know. I would have to say probably the Chipotle, just because it's you can get your veggie bowl there, get all of your rice, your beans, everything that you would want. Give you free guacamole if you get the veggie bowl.
Really?
It's a pretty sweet deal.
Why do you eat so healthy? You're so lithe and fit. I keep telling you, this is the time in your life to eat crap. Don't be eating vegetables. Eat vegetables when you're my age and your body's broken down and paunchy. You should just be living the dream.
Yeah, if,
you should be eating Cinnabons on top of your nachos.
My body maybe won't be broken down and paunchy. That's
you
thing.
Have your 30s and 40s to be dysmorphic, bro.
All right, fair enough.
Well, I can't believe that talk got through to you. All right, dude. You probably
if I get obese, then that's on
me.
Brother.
Okay, well, have fun on the rest of your shift. We'll see you back here at the homestead. By the way, good news: the pool has really turned around. It's looking, I'd say, 70 to 80% of its old self. So maybe later tonight we can gather around and listen to the Mariners get back on the winning ways.
Yeah, hell yeah! Hopefully the sun comes out again.
Yeah. All right, bro. Love you.
All right.
So there he is, DFTS, David from the Starbucks, checking in.
I like the way it cuts off at the end. That's a very, that's just
well,
like a real DFTS.
I started playing, here's the problem. I started playing the David from the Basement sound effect too soon.
Oh, that's what we heard, right, yes.
I cut it off because of some technical challenges. You're not the only one dealing with some technical challenges, Walsh.
I'm over here in the... Glory land, by the way, with my computer.
Yeah, you are. You've great. Gone. You've gone from zero to hero mm-hmm. on the computer side of things. I was just going to say, and I know you got to get out of here because you're on your way to go Ron and Don. But I did a little poking around. Some estimates are that it costs Starbucks $16.5 million to be closed for that half day. That's what Bloomberg was estimating. And one of the other things David was saying to me last night when we were talking about this was, they collected up in a store. He and his Starbucks coworkers from the mall went to this other Starbucks, and throughout the time they were doing their session, it was just a parade of people coming up to the door of the Starbucks and pulling on it, and then going around to the other door and pulling on it. Mm. I feel like hopefully for people of color, there was at least a small glimmer of hope that Starbucks is trying to take this matter seriously, and for white people, there appeared to just be an interruption in their coffee getting that was quite frustrating. Mm-hmm. It was the big takeaway for most of the denizens of Bellingham. We're just like, why can't I get my coffee right now?
This is a weird thing to say. I tried saying it on the actual radio the other day, and it was, well, they looked at me like I was saying something weird, so I'm going to say it again here. I was talking to Veeves about this. I feel like we live in a very trollish culture, and I obviously Starbucks... The reason they can afford to say our doors are open to everybody, even if they're only getting water, is because they are so huge, right? A small coffee shop wouldn't be able to do that. What I'm saying, though, is they hire so many people. They have so many employees like David from the Basement. We're talking about young people, people, you know, just starting out, maybe getting a job in between their other job or while they're in school, whatever. You just have all kinds of people who are working at Starbucks. And now that Starbucks is on the national news because of all of this, I am just surprised we're not seeing more kind of trolls, like somebody just getting a job at Starbucks and just writing something racist on a cup or something. Because you just know then, like, you can be somebody who just, like, totally got Starbucks on the front page of the New York Times again just by doing something racist and stupid, even if you're just doing it to get a rise out of the national media. Don't you sort of feel like there's a lot of power in just, like, some, you know, kid right now?
I hear what you're saying, which is that you could – this would be my response to that. I think that maybe with the exception of your James O'Keefe's of the world – I think that the real truth is most trolls are lazy and they just would rather kind of, you know, typically online. Again, there are exceptions to this. But I just think, A, maybe they haven't thought of it. And B, it's easier to just write some MAGA shit in the comment section of Reddit and or Twitter than to, like, go down to your local Starbucks, apply for a job, show up for the training. I don't just mean the bias training, but the, like, how to make the coffee training. then go to work, and then at the perfect moment deploy some kind of a stunt where you write a racist name on a cup. I mean, you're right. Anything that happens with Starbucks gets amplified because it's Starbucks. So it would actually be – it wouldn't be the worst strategy if you were one of those people. But I think this really gets to the question of follow-through. I think part of why there are so many trolls online is because it's the easiest way to troll. And most of those trolls, if they were to go out into real life and look at real people in the face – by the way, they might even have a moment of like not having the heart to write something racist on a coffee cup that's being handed to a person of color. Because the other problem with – the current communication flow that we all live with, which is it's way easier to be a jerk to someone when you're not standing there with them. And even the trolliest of the trolls, a lot of them, I think, lose their nerve when it's IRL.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I guess my follow-up question, though, would be for us. We're always looking for little adventures to get in. Maybe this is our adventure. Yeah. We get jobs at Starbucks. And then we start writing racist things on cups. Would that be – I don't know. Can we look at,
oh, and the adventure begins again.
Let me check the APM core values policy guide and see if that would be breaking any rules.
We got to wrap this show up, my friend.
Glad I could end it on that note, though.
Listen, if we're going to do any performance art trolling of Starbucks customers at large, it's going to be to push our new hit – Public Radio Weekend Show. Hey, dummies.
What? That's what we do. We get jobs. Okay, this is so much better than being racist. I knew there must be something better. We go into Starbucks. We get jobs there. And we write, hey, dummies, on everybody's cup.
Yeah.
We ask,
right.
For,
so
we ask for your name. What's
people
your name?
People get mad.
Grayson. And then we write, hey, dummies, on it. Yeah. And then, of course, people get mad, and it causes a stir. And also people get confused because they keep on calling out, you know, the other baristas like, hey, dummies.
Yeah.
Hey, dummies. It's great viral marketing, dude.
Yeah. And then everyone's like searching, what does the hashtag hey, dummies mean?
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, our show's a hit.
My God, this is the best idea I've ever had.
What do you think a good show title would be for today's episode? I have like, laugh, love, whatever. That was the only one I wrote down.
Funny.
Did you write down anything else?
I wrote down unrelated negging, which was one that you had, but I'm going to push pretty hard for Grayson under fire because I thought that was my spoof, but I stand by
it. I can get down with that. Right. I can get down with that. Grayson under fire.
I started writing the show description during – I mean, I was listening. But I started writing the show description online of our episode right now while David was talking. And it occurred to me I have no idea what we talked about in this episode. Like, we're in the episode, and I can't tell you anything we talked about before I started complaining about my computer.
Okay, I'll tell you. Do you want me to whiz a few smokers at you? Do you want me to remind you?
Because I remember I had stuff I wanted to say before the break, and we never even got to it. What did we talk about before the break? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Wasn't we suntan. Talked,
we talked about suntan lotion expiring.
Before the break?
Do you need this to go in order?
No, I don't even need it.
Like,
no. We don't have to list it all on the website, and I'm asking more because I just feel like my brain is so bad that I'm in the
show.
You
went through all the publications that are in the Portlandia intro that have actually not been canceled.
Yes, of course.
We talked about that a little bit. We talked about suntan lotion. We talked about what – stop.
Okay.
Shut it down,
we're
Burbank.
Done. Okay,
shut
we're
down.
Done. I'm sorry.
When you keep saying Grace under, when you keep saying Grayson under fire, I keep thinking it's amazing to me that Brett Butler, the notoriously troubled star of Grace Under Fire, is in less trouble today than Roseanne.
I didn't know that she's always troubled. Really, is she? A
well,
problem?
She's had substance abuse problems and just kind of. She's just was kind of a. She was a troubled. She's still alive. Also, she was apparently was at one time pretty troubled person. And so to think that today she's, farting through silk, as they say, and Roseanne is out there on a macadamia farm trying to blame Ambien for her shit.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating turn. Life comes at you fast.
I always liked her. Did Brett Butler, did she just get in trouble for herself, or was she also being a
bad
person?
No, she here's what the issue was. She had a pretty serious drinking problem, and the word was, and I knew some people that worked on one young person who worked on her show towards the end, and basically what happened was she was having real issues, I believe, with drinking and also possibly with mental health issues, and they wanted to get Grace Under Fire was a big hit show, and they wanted to get to the whatever number of episodes you have to get to in order to be eligible for syndication.
Oh, yeah, that's the money.
Because everybody stood to benefit. And they were like 10 episodes short. And so, but everybody there, from the writers probably up to the, you know, the production people to the camera people, were like, we just got to get this person to the finish line so we can all start printing money. And so the word was that they just would write these cockamamie episodes. They basically wheel her in like a Hannibal Lecter situation and is proper in the corner, do the show, do the episode, because they just all needed to get to a certain number.
Oh,
I don't know if that was
bummer.
Successful or not, but that was the story that I remember. And I don't, you know, I wish her well. I don't know what Brett Butler's current status is. Well, it looks like she's making projects. She made something called Friday's Child. She played Miss LaField in 2018.
Yeah, I'm looking at that too.
There you go. So, hey, guess what? We didn't end the show on racism. We ended the show on me slandering noted TV personality Brett Butler.
Nice.
So, yeah. All
right. So we have a show title. I have a description already written in. Now we just have to figure out what song to go out on. And if this conversation goes the way the rest of the show has, block out a half hour for this. That's not me making fun of you, by the way. That's me making fun of me. I could not be less focused today. So what song? Oh, one last thing I want to tell you. I love that you also call it suntan lotion, because I'll bet you people, before they get to this part in the show, have already sent us emails saying, like, suntan lotion, that's really what they use.
Sunblock.
It's sunblock, which you were alternating between the two of them, but I always call it suntan lotion, and that is, I feel like that's oldest man thing to say, because isn't that what people used to put on when they were trying to, like,
right.
get, like, really brown in the sun?
Now I'm thinking, could we use that as a guiding light for our song?
I'm sorry, I'm tan. I like to be tan. It just feels good.
Because there's something about the sun or suntan. Did you already have a song picked out?
No, I'm kind of fumbling around. I'm fumbling my sweaters on that as we speak.
Oh, man.
Let me see what I've got if I type in. Any sunny day real estate songs that we like?
How about Pale Sun Crescent Moon by Cowboy Junkies? Oh. I don't even know what that song sounds like, but I know that when I start playing it, I will be time traveled right back to my freshman year of college when I was obsessed with Cowboy Junkies.
It's called Pale Sun, what moon?
Crescent Moon. Pale Sun, Crescent Moon. It's by Cowboy Junkies.
Okay.
Did you have a Cowboy Junkies phase ever?
I not really. I saw them. I saw the first half of a show when they were playing in like a small town in New Hampshire, in like one of those kind of cool old town hall kind of buildings. Or maybe like an old theater kind of building. And it was nice.
Sure.
But then it was boring, though, too. Like, it was just like, it just got real boring. It was like, they're more like kind of acoustic-y. I think there's a fill.
Yeah, well, this is going to be this is gonna be a lot of that, so buckle up.
All right, they have an album called Pale Sun Crescent Moon. The first song is called Crescent Moon. They don't have a song, I don't think, called Pale Moon. Sun Crescent.
Read me the names of the other songs on Pale Sun.
Okay, here we go. Crescent Moon, First Recollection, Ring on the Sill.
Oh yeah, that one.
Anniversary Song.
Grayson. Anniversary. Yeah.
Hayden.
Anniversary Song. Anniversary Song. I like that one. I think that one's wow. Dude, you know Jay Maskus, Dinosaur Jr. guy, wrote one of the songs on this album?
I did not know that.
Ooh, I love this song. This is a very romantic song to me. I know it's corny and 90s and from a Canadian band called Cowboy Junkies, but I make no apologies.
Ooh, I like this. I have no beef with this band, by the way. I just that particular performance was kind of boring, so we left. For the record.
All right, that's going to wrap things up today. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Till then, enjoy your Wednesday. Go Mariners, go eat a bagel, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all. Oh, just one more thing. Just kidding.
power out.